Welcome to Bears on Tap, brought to you by OnTapSportsNet.com and presented by Manscaped. If you're looking for the best manscaping products on the planet, go to Manscaped.com and browse their awesome selection. The Lawnmower 3.0 brings you 7,000 RPMs of skin-safe technology so you don't nick your balls or any other sensitive areas. Are you looking to keep your boys fresh all day long? No problem. Go and pick up the ball toner and deodorant so you're fresh all day long. Go to Manscaped.com and use promo code ONTAP to get 20% off and free shipping on all your manscaping needs.
Hey guys, it's Roquan Smith here. On behalf of everyone over at Bears on Tap, they want me to wish all their fans happy holidays and a safe new year. Duke, Brandon, and Lucas look forward to putting their meat on the table in 2021 and beyond. Bear down.
Wow. Special thanks and shout out to Roquan Smith for doing that video for us. He's the man and he is telling the absolute truth. We will continue to put our meat on the table in the year of 2021. No doubt about it. We're Bears on Tap. Go ahead and give us a follow at that handle or follow On Tap Sportsnet for all of your Chicago sports needs. I'm Lucas Perfetti. You can follow me at Lucas Perfetti 46. I'm also joined alongside by Beat on 300 and an extra special shout out to Duke at that pod guy, Duke Coughlin, for getting that video made for us. Awesome shit. Really, I mean, it's awesome.
Bro, straight up, big shout out to Roquan Smith, man. All-pro message from an all-pro player. I mean, dude, I honestly, like, when I made that cameo, I mean, I talked to you guys about it. I had no idea he would actually say meat on the table, but the fact that he put his meat on the table and said meat on the table just says everything you need to know about Roquan Smith, man. Fucking fired up, bro.
He's a cool dude. He's a cool dude. We all know that, right, Beatdown?
Yeah, and he got absolutely jagged on the Pro Bowl this year and unreal. Like, I don't know how the leading tackler in the NFL doesn't have a Pro Bowl, you know, under his belt for this year. And it's not like he's not a likable guy. He bangs porn stars. He takes pictures in sunflower fields. And God bless, you know, the Bears if they pick up my other sunflower field linebacker and put those two together in the same linebacking core next season.
Yeah, I mean, and B-Don kind of scratched the surface. Today we're going to be talking about how there were a few Pro Bowl snubs, but the most notable being Roquan Smith, that stallion that he is. We're also going to be talking about this Jacksonville Jaguars game and the what else? We got fan questions today. So we're going to have a nice little loaded episode for you. We're a little bit different format this week just because of Christmas and stuff. So again, as Roquan Smith said, we want to wish you all happy holidays, I guess, is a more politically correct term. But if you celebrate Christmas, Merry Christmas and Happy New Year to everyone. Hopefully 2021 brings everyone a lot better of a time than 2020 did. I think we're all ready to move on from this whole vid thing. But yeah, let's start off with the Pro Bowl snub. Roquan Smith, I mean, we've seen a million tweets about it. Leads the NFL in solo tackles, leads the NFL in off-ball linebackers with tackle for loss. What am I missing here, gentlemen? One more that he leads the NFL in.
Banged porn stars this season. in the middle of a national pandemic. He's beating James Harden. I mean, James Harden is just going off.
Bro, James Harden's beating himself. Have you seen that guy lately?
Dog, he is an anomaly. I've seen him, like, shredded with, like, a 12-pack, and I've seen him look like us.
Like fucking three cheeseburgers down, bro.
Straight up pudding. Yeah, absolutely. No, but we've saw a lot go out about it, and I think even, you know, I gotta even give Matt Nagy a little bit of credit. He kind of went to bat for Roquan in his interview today. He pretty much was like, it's ridiculous. Like, he was just like, this guy's a fucking animal. Like, leads the league again in solo tackles. I think top three in total tackles. Most tackle for loss in the league. Still has four sacks, I believe. So the guy's a freak. And obviously a really cool dude. So I don't understand that. Another big one, Cairo Santos, man. He's got 22 straight kicks in a row. 22 straight field goals, which I hate to, like, jinx it, but I hope a game doesn't come down to a field goal because he kind of is due for a miss. Yeah, but I mean, that's the reality. Like, it's hard to go on a streak like that. I would love for him to keep going. So that's definitely someone that people think got shafted. And another one is Allen Robinson. And I feel like that's a little bit different because when you compare Allen Robinson to some of the other Pro Bowl wide receivers, I think that's more understandable. When you stack up Roquan Smith, and I'm going to get you the tweet, Roquan Smith versus the two guys that made the Pro Bowl. I believe it was Bobby Wagner and Fred Warner. He's pretty much essentially better than both statistically.
Yeah, man, and I think you can really just drive the point home even a little bit farther when it comes to Roquan. Man, I think he's, you know, and I'll will it to into existence if I have to do it myself, but I really believe he has been an all-pro caliber player this year. You know, this isn't just an NFC or AFC thing. I think he's legitimately been that good. You know, he has 4 sacks on top of, you know, all these combined tackles. I believe right now he's sitting at 128 combined, 89 solo tackles, and 17 tackles for loss, which is just absolutely incredible. You know, and that doesn't even include everything he does in coverage. You know, I think it would be a fairly, I think it's a fair consistent opinion that he is one of the best coverage linebackers in all football. So yeah, I think a snub really, you know, I think that's putting it lightly. I think a guy in Roquan Smith has played incredible ball in his third season, really looking like that top 10 pick, you know, number 8 overall that we drafted him with. And, you know, if I'm going to give a shout out to anyone else, I guess, who kind of hasn't been talked about as a possible snub, I got to give Kyle Fuller a little bit of credit, because Kyle Fuller has an incredibly low passer rating against him. He has not given up a lot this season. And he's been kind of tasked with a lot of number one receivers. You know, there's a lot of guys on this defense that I think deserve recognition. I think a guy like Akeem Hicks as well, you know, even a guy like Eddie Jackson is a guy we talk about a lot, you know, maybe not so much this year, but I think Kyle Fuller is a guy who has really kind of just showed up every single week, regardless of how the team defense has played.
Yeah. And I feel like most of the time, you know, with the Pro Bowl, with the exception of the Ravens, who, you know, they just get so many people every year, it's usually those teams that are the top end playoff teams that get the most guys. And I hate the system, the Pro Bowl system. And the games have been trash. Like the last like few years, the last time that, you know, the Pro Bowl meant something to me, or at least was fun, was the Sean Taylor, Brian Moorman hit.
Yeah.
The Pro Bowl didn't mean shit. It hasn't meant shit since. And like, I see that they have gotten creative with it. I forgot. I read something about the Pro Bowl for this year for one of my classes, but it's just, I would rather have him get all pro, because it's crazy too. You can miss the Pro Bowl and still 100%. Get all pro. So it's just like, what are we doing here? And then, you know, they'll do NFL top 100 and they'll snub him too. So it's just like, he's getting it from like 3 different angles. And
I think the players recognize it. And that's one thing, well, I think
they better get him top 50.
I think we saw an outcry from really like everyone. Bilal Nichols, Khalil Mack. There's a ton of quotes out there that if you're on Twitter.
Khalil said I wish he could take my spot, or I could, yeah, you know, give him my spot.
I think a lot of people know exactly how well Roquan Smith is playing. And when you think of Fred Warner and Bobby Wagner, those are two veterans in the league. People really didn't know who Roquan Smith was, especially because, you know, 2018, he wasn't the greatest. He was a rookie. And then 2019 is when he really started coming on, and he's exploding this year. And it's in a team, it's playing for a team that's not very good. So when you have these fans voting for it, it's like, well, everyone knows Bobby Wagner's a monster. Everyone knows Fred Warner's a monster. But when you really stack them up side by side, you have Roquan Smith, 17 tackles for loss. Bobby Wagner, 7 tackles for loss. Fred Warner, 4. QB hits, 6 for Roquan Smith. Wagner, 11. Warner, 5. Sacks, 4 for
The Seahawks defense is so bad, bro. And
4 for Roquan Smith, 3 for Bobby Wagner, 0 for Fred Warner. Passes defense, you got 5 for Roquan Smith, 8 for Bobby Wagner, 3 for Fred Warner. Tackles, he's leading 128 to 126 to 101. So it's just kind of like he's leading in most of those categories, and he's competitive in every other one. Go ahead, Bidon.
No, yeah, and what I was going to say, kind of, it even counteracts my point, but the Seahawks defense is like one of the worst units in the whole league. And I guess he's got to kind of put the team on his back, and that's probably why he's still the tackling machine. I mean, he's been there for probably like 7 or 8 years now, Bobby Wagner. He's not
competing with a bunch of other dogs that are fucking trying to get tackles. Like, well, he has to make those tackles.
He's the guy we all had on our high school team who you just put in, he'd put his head down, and he would automatically get the tackle. And that's how we look at Roquan. I really do feel, though, that Roquan's the type of guy that would use that as motivation. And I think it was you, Lucas, that put the tweet out, like, he's going to drag his nuts all over Aaron Rodgers' face. So would love to see that, not necessarily see it, but, like, would love to metaphorically see it.
Yeah, and I mean, that kind of goes into an article I even wrote about Roquan before the season started, dude. The headline, the man, the myth, the chip, dude. He always has that chip on his shoulder. That's what he came into the season saying he was going to have, and he's going to have a career high in almost every statistical category when it's all said and done. He already does, you know, besides sacks. So that's saying something with two games left to go. And, you know, to that point where, you know, you have a guy like Bobby Wagner who eats a lot of tackles because you don't really have anybody else playing well. Dude, Danny Trevathan has 100 combined tackles as well.
He has 100 tackles, yeah.
So the fact that Roquan Smith can still eat with another guy eating next to him says a lot about how well Roquan Smith is near the ball at all times.
It's funny you say that because I was looking at the linebacker stats and I was like, low key, Danny Trevathan has 100 fucking tackles, like very, very low key because everyone's been kind of dragging him through the mud. But then when you put that in comparison to someone like Allen Robinson that everyone feels like they're getting, like he's getting snubbed, you got Davante Adams, DeAndre Hopkins, DK Metcalf, Justin Jefferson. I think it's pretty justified.
Yeah. Pretty much. And the thing is, too, and we've talked about it on this podcast, and I know other Bears publications bring it up, it's like Allen Robinson is our number one, but if he goes to, you know, half of the teams in the league, he's like 1B. I think you talked about it just last week. Like he's still a great receiver, but he's not a Davante Adams or Julio Jones or, you know, one of these top playmaking receivers in the NFL. I don't know why my brain just went blank there, but I was about to say, like, someone that's definitely not a top receiver in the NFL, but
he's about to say like Tyler Boyd,
DeAndre,
someone who's very similar to fucking Allen Robinson.
But DeAndre Hopkins, like that's one of my favorite receivers in the league, and that's a guy that can do it all. Hopefully, he can't do it all these next 2 weeks because this is a 49ers stand podcast. Now we are 49ers fans and we are Rams fans for the next 2 weeks.
Truth. And like before we segue into that Jacksonville Jaguars game, I do think that realistically, Jimmy G was set to return. I didn't see his practice status, but or at least designated to be open to his practice window from injured reserve. So I'm hoping he comes back just to try to get a W to put his hometown team in the fucking playoffs. That would be dope. I tweeted at him. He didn't respond. Clearly, he wasn't going to. Speaking of banging porn stars, that's another guy that. He's down. You got to Arlington Heights product. You got to love it. But realistically,
big porn star guy.
Yeah. Another thing that I just kind of want to acknowledge, and we don't have to spend a lot of time on it, but I feel like that there was one specific blogger that released an article that may have made it seem like there is an issue with having Sam Mustipher and Alex Barrs both being good players. There's not an issue. It's okay to have four good interior linemen. That's just nonsense. Realistically, and a ton of stuff has actually come out about Sam Mustipher talking about how he takes complete command of the offensive line and he puts everything in check. And it's like,
come on, plays like a champion. Stand on a game shit, bro.
What took you so goddamn long?
Yeah, well, you know, I think a big part of that too with Alex Barrs, you know, because I think that's kind of the one guy on the outside looking in if when James Daniels returns is. Alex Barrs was brought in to play a little bit of every position. Like he had played tackle at Notre Dame. He had played tackle in the preseason. He had played, you know, he was our backup tackle, I believe in 2019 near the end of the season as well. He was kind of in that swing tackle rotation. So, I mean, it kind of gives the Bears flexibility. Cause you know, we don't know, you know, Bobby Massey got injured earlier on in the year. And we haven't even heard whispers of how he's going to be coming back to this roster anytime soon, you know, and it kind of just opens up this idea that, you know, even if Alex were not to start at right tackle next year or anything like that, he's a guy who's flexible enough that he seems that he's comfortable playing different positions. He's a guy that can, you know, instead of a guy like Rashawn Coward, who apparently is our swing offensive lineman by default, I think that's a guy that in Alex Barrs who has a lot of experience right now playing both at a high level in a starting role and in a backup role, played well in college. It's just a good problem to have. It's a very good problem to have.
Tackle in college, no? And it's not like Jermaine Defetti's under contract next year and you're able to get Alex Barrs back as a fucking restricted free agent for damn near nothing or a second round pick for him. Go ahead, Vidon, sorry.
See, but the thing is though, is there wasn't a single Bears person, like anybody that covers it, whether you do the podcast, you're in the newspaper, you're on TV, that wasn't saying 3, 4, 5 weeks ago, we need to make a change at offensive line. We need to get these guys an opportunity. So how the fuck are you going to sit here and say, now that they have their opportunity, they have somehow brought some chemistry and camaraderie within that unit and they're playing well, they have all put their meats on the table collectively to give Mitch a clean pocket to throw from and David Montgomery lanes to run from. Like you said, Duke, offensive linemen, they're no longer the offensive linemen that our parents grew up watching. These guys can play two, three different positions. If you can snap the ball, hell, go do that too. We've seen it. It can't be something that we can play both sides of the fence on. Like, well, if they're the new, if Mustafa and Bars are able to stay at, you know, this level of productivity for a 16-game season, then, yeah, the offensive line has a lot of money allocated to it for guys that aren't necessarily performing at a high level. And well, you make
and that's why we've been fucking advocating for Ryan Pace, saying how big of a jagoff Matt Nagy is this entire year, because it's insane. The biggest problem with James Daniels and him having to move back to guard or whatever the case was, and Cody Whitehair having to play back at center and having them both be out of their natural positions and shit, was because they didn't have a center that communicate the calls. And now you have this whole report coming out about this fucking undrafted free agent that you pretty much got his coach that got him there fired because you don't know how to run a fucking offense. He is now like commander in chief of the offense and literally fucking, I think it was Dave Montgomery who said, literally, he controls that offensive line. Everyone just falls in line. He's fucking, he like exudes that confidence to be
literally like
the signal caller. And that's great, dude. Everyone in the NFL is young, but the problem is you had this guy on the bench for two fucking years before he played. It's just unbelievable. And if we're going to cover the Jacksonville Jagoffs, we should cover a guy that should be coaching there next year as possibly a quality control coach.
Sam Mustafa as well, mentored by Olin Krutz.
Literally built for this shit.
Absolutely. Yeah, man.
He's got a kid coming up too in the offensive line ranks for either high school or college, I believe.
No, Illinois. I say he's over at Illinois right now. Yeah, dude. And, you know, to that point, beat on where guys are playing different positions, you know, a lot of people forget Cody Whitehair was actually drafted as a tackle. So, I mean, that is a situation where if Alex Bars continues to play at this level throughout the rest of the season, and if we do sneak into the playoffs and he plays at a high level out there, we will find a way to keep these guys on the field. We will find a way to make it work. These guys are interchangeable in different positions. You got to find a way that works. And, you know, regardless of popular belief or, you know, of people forgetting about how good James Daniels is, the second he comes back next year is going to be a huge upgrade to an already upgraded looking offensive line. So it's nothing but good things can come out of this.
Yeah, and I mean, too, also, I mean, switch to defensive side, too. It's like we get Eddie Goldman back. A lot of the, you know, big gash plays up the middle are gone. So it's like, be happy with what we got for this year. Yeah, we got, you know, we were able to get 16 games in, hopefully, knock on wood. We haven't had any, you know, postponements or anything like that. And we have an opportunity with our work cut out for us to be in the playoffs. Duke, back to that one final point just about linemen. You simply can't go 2-3 deep at every offensive lineman position. So being a big dude that is a fringe 53, 54 man on the roster guy, it's simply a necessity at that point if you want to continue to stay on a roster or on a practice squad, similar to what Bars and Mustafa did, and now look at them getting their opportunity. And I remember Lucas called for it. Lucas and I talked about it before they made the switch that, you know, if you bring in young, hungry players, the hungry dog runs faster. They'll probably play better than the person that's been playing in that position for 9 to 10 weeks throughout the season. And that's kind of like what I've taken away from two of my Notre Dame guys getting their opportunity. And then two, you even throw a guy like Cole Kmet in there. He's a great blocking tight end. And they're using him a lot more. He played every snap last game. I was very surprised to see that.
Yeah, dude. And that's awesome to see. And that kind of goes back to, you know, something similar I was saying as well, kind of in the middle of the year. You know, people probably got sick of me saying it every single episode, but it was like, what else do we have? What more do you have to lose? You know, why not try something different? Now we finally have tried something different and it seems to be fucking working, man. When's the last time we had a Bears offense that fired off 30-point games like this? Like, it's been a long time. And to see a guy like Mitchell Trubisky, you know, we're not going to really go to town on Mitch in this episode because we've done plenty of it already. But I mean, dude, to see a guy like that kind of just doing his own thing with different ideas, different fucking suggestions being thrown out every single week, it's a great thing to see. And it all starts with that offensive line. It starts with Mitchell Trubisky. It starts with getting Darnell Mooney more involved. It starts with getting Cole Kmet more involved. Now it's all about the other side of the football. And, you know, I think we potentially have a chance with the Jacksonville Jagoffs to really get something going on defense this week.
Yeah, and honestly, on the topic of the Jacksonville Jaguars, I thought that this was going to be the Ryan Pace Bowl. I thought this was going to be Glennon versus Trubisky, but as the depth chart states, they have Minshew slated at one, so I don't know if he'll be available for this weekend, but I was kind of looking forward to the long neck coming out there and going up against Mitch, because Mitch took his job.
Yeah, no kidding. I mean, I didn't even know that Minshew was going to actually be getting the start. You know, regardless really which way you go, you
I
know,
could Minshew, be wrong. I just have the depth chart in front of me, and I don't see any injury in front of him, so I could be wrong. And if I'm not mistaken, we're not doing the injury report episode, so.
Yeah, it could have been some Bears Twitter Jagoffrey that I read. You know, I already got something with the James Robinson thing before the show, but you know, I mean, really, regardless, either way of who's going to be playing in this game, you look at, you know, obviously the Ryan Pace Bowl with a guy like Mike Glennon, you know, that would be kind of like a, you know, full circle kind of moment for a guy like Mitchell Trubisky, who already kind of had one with Deshaun Watson 2 weeks ago. So, I mean, that would be kind of different, I guess. And then you would have a situation even with a guy like Gardner Minshew, who was a late round quarterback. You know, we had a guy in Ryan Pace who has always preached about how he was going to draft a quarterback every single season. He obviously never did. And you had a guy like Gardner Minshew kind of sneak onto the scene last year in a, what, fifth, sixth round pick. So, I mean, that's.
See, but here's an interesting point, though, now, too. Think of this. Gardner Minshew is not going to have a job. He has two more games as the Jacksonville Jagoffs starting quarterback because the Jets won on Sunday. So now the Jagoffs are in line to get the number one pick. So I could be wrong about this, but looking at the depth chart, and I know this early in the week, it's about 10:30 Wednesday night. This will be back out, you know, by Thursday. But Gardner Minshew is slated as the starter for the Jaguars. And one thing that should be, you know, noted is he could be playing for his NFL future in these last 2 weeks with the Jets slated to get the number one pick and presumably picking Trevor Lawrence. So we could get a very dangerous Gardner Minshew out there on Sunday. So I don't want that defense to overlook him. I know he's not a world beater, but that guy can definitely make some plays, and he played in a great offense in college.
But, okay, my thing is, didn't Doug Marrone say that they're looking at both to see who's going to be the starter? Or is it confirmed? Like, I know he's first.
I'm just going off on what's ESPN. If I'm wrong, then we get, you know, the Ryan Pace Bowl with Mike Glennon. So either way, it's going to be a quarterback that's hungry. The hungry dog runs faster, as we say. So we'll see.
Longback is actually able to feel the snap in Jacksonville. Maybe Florida's just the state. Maybe he's not meant to be somewhere where it's a little bit chillier.
And even Jake Luton gave the Packers a run for their money, and they only ended up losing that game by, I think, 3 points. So this is a team that has played some good games. They definitely didn't play good last week, but they have weapons.
Well, and it's something that Bilal Nichols said in his interview. He was like, they've played every team tough. They're not just like a rollover. He's like, he described them as gritty. He's like, they're not like a rollover type of team. And I don't know. I we don't know how hot Doug Marrone's seat is. It seems like he's okay, but Adam Gase, it seemed like he tried to win that game out of spite to screw the Jets out of what's it called. So I don't know if Doug Marrone might try to have a spike game against the Bears. I'm not sure. A lot of people are saying it's going to be a lay down game for the Jags because they're probably in place to draft Trevor Lawrence. But I mean, shoot, it's not, I'm not quite sure.
Fuck you, Trevor Lawrence. All my friends hate Trevor Lawrence.
That's some Notre Dame assault right there. But that I mean, is, I'll give I was it to like, you,
damn, so uncalled for, but then
hey, I will say this though. Put your fucking stimulus check on ND plus 19.5. They're not getting their doors blown off 2 weeks in a row.
I will say this. Please don't do that. Anyone, don't put your stimulus check or any significant amount of money on Notre Dame after what just happened to them.
All right. So all I got to say about Notre Dame is that Gardner Minshew and DJ Chark, they got this great chemistry because we're done talking about Notre Dame now.
Thank God.
All right. But anyway, no, actually real fucking point here. Gardner Minshew, DJ Chark, they do got a little bit of magic going. They got a little bit of that Mitchell Trubisky, Allen Robinson kind of, kind of thing going. You know, DJ Chark had an incredible season last year. He was kind of a big reason for Gardner kind of having the coming out party, if you will. And that's kind of the biggest threat, I think, with this offense, besides a guy like James Robinson. You know, obviously we can't do the full injury report this week, but James Robinson's the guy who's a little bit banged up, so we don't know how much we're going to be able to see them. But I really think the biggest test is going to be Gardner, Chark. James O'Shaughnessy is going to be a potential guy at the tight end room, and guy in Tyler Eifert. Yeah, there we go with the more Notre Dame bullshit. A guy in Tyler Eifert who on any given Sunday can still give you something. So yeah, they definitely do have some weapons on this offense, but I do think this is a great opportunity for this defense to really have a game to get some momentum going into Green Bay. I really think this is the time. This is a good fucking confidence booster. This is one
where it's like, if not now, then when? Because I thought it was there against Houston, and then they kind of fell apart. And don't get me wrong, there are some weapons on that Minnesota offense. In my opinion, we're kind of seeing what happened with the Chicago Bears with Jay Cutler as the Minnesota Vikings with Kirk Cousins. And that's a team that was pretty much based defensively, that thought they were a quarterback away from what's it called, but then realized after they had to pay for the franchise quarterback that you're going to have to lose some pieces on defense and compete more on offense. And now you're not the same team. And then you kind of, you're in a shitty spot. You know what I mean? And I think we saw that happen with the Chicago Bears. And to me though, they are able to put up points long. That's, I don't know why I took a deep dive into pretty much my Jay Cutler hate again, but the reality is they got some weapons over there, and that's a tough defense to defend, especially when you have an offensive coordinator, or I'm sorry, a defensive coordinator like Chuck Pagano, that's willing to give easy underneath shit to guys that can catch and run, and guys like Dalvin Cook who are absolute monsters.
Yeah, and you know, that's kind of, you know, I think you nailed it on the head, dude. If not now, then when? Because we are in crunch time at this fucking point. We can't afford to let a team like the Jaguars hang around. We need all of our momentum to continue straight through this Jagoff game. You know, we need to continue to just take care of business. You know, I don't want to deal with the underneath routes. I want this defense to take chances against this offense. I want this defense to get to Gardner Minshew. You know, I don't want that Jagoff to have a second in the pocket. You know, I want Khalil Mack and Robert Quinn to go off. I want Robert Quinn to go off.
I want
to say that one more fucking time. I want Robert to go off.
Yeah.
I want to see it, dude. I want to see it all come together for one game, dude. Give me 1.5 sacks, a forced fumble, and like 4 tackles. And guess what? I'm fucking sleeping like a goddamn baby after I beat off at night.
No, we want 2 sacks, bro. We want 2 sacks, please. No 1.5. We want Robert Quinn in the backfield all day, too. And one thing that I've seen from watching Gardner Minshew, if it is Minshew or if it's Glennon, either one of them, when you get some pressure in their face, the ducks start getting thrown in the air, and then the defense starts running back with it the other way. So we could see a pick 6 this weekend.
It's a way less of an orchestra. It's a little bit more chaos, just kind of a jam band over there in the Jacksonville. But realistically,
jam band.
Yeah, you get what I'm saying? They just kind of get together and jam. They're not like an orchestra or a symphony or anything like that. Like, that's kind of what Minnesota is. They're very well-designed.
Now, are they like a summer camp or an Electric Forest jam band? Like, how hippie?
Like, are you doing acid and just kind of...
Yeah, are you wearing capri jeans, no socks, and like no shirt?
Oh, yeah, you're going to the other side and back, no doubt about it.
Fuck yeah, dude, let's rock.
Chicago's
there. Yeah, with Minshew at quarterback, bro, like, yeah, absolutely.
100%.
Jackoffs.
Yeah, no doubt. It's like the NBA commissioner, though, in my opinion, is bald head.
I mean, realistically, this is a game that the Bears should win and win handily, and we can joke about it, but they better not be in the meeting rooms because, like we said, I mean, we just saw the Jets take out the fucking Rams, and
Jets
it was
took out the
like,
Rams and the Bengals took out the Steelers, both
kind of insane.
Point dogs.
Kind of insane. If anything, that makes me a little bit more worried. What's the line on this game? Do you know?
It's 7.5, which is a dummy line. So either it's going to be a 3-point game or the Bears are going to win by 40. There's no in between.
I really like your thinking, B-Don.
I've been down the 7.5 point line a lot of times, and that's how it happens every single time. So,
okay. Well, I think realistically, this is
the I will be betting the team total instead of anything regarding the spread.
This is realistically the first time I have ever said this in the last few years, but I'm not worried about the Bears offense at all.
No, actually not.
If anything, I'm a little bit worried that they might put up might be efficient enough that they kind of rest Dave Montgomery's legs for the week 17 game, maybe in the second half, to only give him a couple carries, and I have him in my fantasy football championship. So that would be not ideal.
He's definitely going to go over 1,000 yards. I think he's at 907 the last time I checked.
Yeah. Well, don't underestimate Matt Nagy. He could pull some
you
stuff.
You motherfucker. You goddamn it. Now I'm going to think about that for the rest of the week.
Well, I would say I agree with you wholeheartedly, Lucas, but there's really three guys on this defense that are big enough impact players that I think they could affect some stuff, especially in the run game. Josh Allen, very good pass rusher. You know, I just said that he could affect the run game, but he is a guy that could actually get to Mitchell Trubisky if Charles Leno isn't up to snuff. You have a guy, Miles Jack, who is very much a roaming type of linebacker, very similar to what we have in, like, a Roquan Smith, almost a poor man version of him, honestly, at this point in his career. And a guy in Joe Schobert, who is a Wisconsin Badgers alum, who has actually, you know, found a lot of success with the Cleveland Browns and has come to Jacksonville and has kind of been the head of that defense. He, ever since, you know, even in the Wisconsin days, dude, kind of knew that guy was going to be a legit middle linebacker. And he brings
his lunch pail to work.
Absolutely, dude. And you know, those are kind of the three guys in this defense that I do have a lot of fear for. But you know, outside of that, they have a really, really young secondary. I'm looking at their strong safety right now, Josh Jones. I believe that's a former Packers like second round pick from a couple years ago. I believe he actually had like a training camp stint with us for a minute. So that kind of says everything that needs to be said about their secondary. Definitely not the AJ Boye fucking what's that fucking one Jagoff's name with the Rams? What's that fucking
Jalen Ramsey?
Yeah, Jalen Jagoff. Yeah, he's not there anymore either. You know, Barry Church back in that, you know, actual legit fucking Saxonville day when they could actually have coverage sacks. Way, way off from that now, but there's definitely some guys on there that they're going to need to game plan around. You know, Bill Lazor can't get lazy. He still has to continue to make strides with this offense, continue to be creative, continue to get Cole Kmet, you know, involved, continue to get Darnell Mooney with some underneath routes. I really like the route they've been doing with Mooney and Kmet, where they've kind of put him in motion before the play and they roll Mitch out for to kind of move around the sidelines. 100%. I really want to see that continue to happen, especially if we get some plays with Allen Robinson down the field early on. That'll open up a lot really quickly.
Yeah, definitely. I think we all know that the Bears should win this game, and it would be a very Bears thing for them to lose this game, but I'm pretty confident that they're going to go ahead and take care of business on Sunday. One thing I kind of want to give a little bit of a disclaimer. The reason, I mean, our Jagoff count's usually pretty high, but it's much, much higher this week because Bedon kind of set us to a challenge, and it's Jacksonville Jagoff week and we can't say the other word. So I just want to make that clear. If you're like maybe a new listener or something like that, that we drop JOs a lot, but not that regularly, you know?
Yeah. We're kind of beating it to a point at this point. Yeah.
It's pretty done. So
we're not trying to be a dead meme this early on in our podcasting careers. We promise.
Hey, no, we got some stuff. We got some stuff rippling. We got Roquan saying meat on the table. I'm not too worried
about that. There's
a reason why we edit these things.
100%. But let's I'm just going to refer to it as JO for now. Every JO has been no doubt it's going to be kept.
I do think for next season we should introduce a Jagoff of the Week segment, though.
100%. We can really introduce that on Sunday.
All the way there for that.
Well, I mean, Chuck Pagano's been winning it pretty much every week. So as soon as I kind of thought of that idea, but yeah, we should regiment it for sure. We're going to do that from now on, starting next week. We're going to regiment that, moving forward. Nice new segment birth. That's dope as hell. Realistically though, let's get into these score predictions. Bedon, let's start with you. What do you think it's going to be? And give us your bold prediction back to back.
All right, bold prediction. I kind of got into it earlier when Duke was putting his meat on the table, but I'm calling for a pick six from that defense. I feel like I've said it a couple times this episode. Whoever's at quarterback, whether it's Minshew or Glennon, if you can get the type of pressure that we're capable of getting on a quarterback, some ducks will be thrown and those DBs will have a chance to make a play. Score prediction, I'm going to go Bears. They're going to end up in the 30s again. I got the Bears 38 and I have the Jaguars 17. I feel like 17 is a decent amount of points. I do feel like our games have been not necessarily like shootout, but there's been a higher tempo and a quicker pace to our games, and there's been a lot more points since the Detroit or well, yeah, Detroit Green Bay week, whichever way you want to cut it. But this offense, like Duke said, and like you said, Lucas, I'm not worried about it. I think they're going to go in. They're going to make their plays. We just have to be able to make sure that we can keep guys like DJ Chark, James Robinson, and LaVisca Chenault, former member of the program, Aaron Parpart's favorite receiver from last year, Mr. Premier Amp. So that's a personal one. I want him with zero catches. Also part of my bold prediction.
But you want to check.
All right, so is that me now?
Yeah, it's you.
All right, fucking making sure here. All right, just for the fact that he actually did the cameo, I got to fucking say that Roquan Smith's going to pick six this week. I really think it's going to fucking happen. I think Robert Quinn's going to force fucking Gardner Minshew or, oh, I really hope
dude, it's these are like beyond dude. Meat on the table picks. Like you literally describe what quarter, what time it's going to be, who forces the fucking quarterback to throw it. Like, no, I like it, dude. That's
that was the Eddie Jackson interception. I got so
fucked. I was so I'm upset for you still to this time.
Yeah, I'm never going to forget that. But, yeah, man, I won't get too in detail, I guess. I'll give Roquan Smith a pick six, though. I really think guys are going to force pressure, kind of like how B-Down was saying a little bit earlier. That's when the ducks come out. Roquan's going to catch himself a duck. He's going to put it in the end zone, and he's going to go hop on a fucking boat post game with the game ball.
You're just going to see his arm come between both his legs, and he's putting his meat on the grass in Jacksonville.
Yeah, dude. Ridiculous statement. 100%, man. Roquan from fucking Montezuma, bro. He's bringing that Montezuma's revenge to the fucking end zone.
That's disgusting.
All right. So we going with score prediction then, too?
Yeah.
All right. I got to go like fucking, I'm going to go like 38-10. I'm going 38-10 Chicago Bears, man. I think fucking, you know, just how I was talking about Roquan putting his meat on the table. I think Cole Kmet's going to have a big day with these safeties. I think he might have a little bit of a challenge with a guy like Joe Schobert, but I think Miles Jack is going to be paying a lot more attention to potentially slot receiver to kind of make up for some of the lack of cornerback depth with the Jacksonville Jaguars. And, you know, dude, Mitch is going to.
Whoa. Party foul.
Yeah, you fucked up.
You fucked it up on like the last leg.
Yeah, you fumbled it on the one,
Leon.
You killed us. It's the Jacksonville Jaguars.
Well, I hate to break your guys' heart, but I actually killed it like fucking 10 minutes ago and you guys were like fucking dancing. But I totally did. I was waiting to see if you guys were going to notice.
You killed us, dude.
Just fucking edit it in.
Come on, you ruined the whole episode.
Now we have to start over.
Yeah.
No, we don't. Okay, we're getting to my bold prediction. All right. So realistically, I think the Bears are going to win this game 34-14. I think the product of Illinois, that Redbird, Rockford, Illinois, James Robinson is going to find his way into the end zone a couple times. But yeah, realistically, I think the Bears should win this handily. I am going to go ahead and say that Cole Kmet catches two touchdowns this week, has seven receptions, and 112 yards.
It's a Notre Dame tight end off. Eifert versus Kmet. Let's ride.
Let's do it. Oh, yeah. Kmet's going to just straight up destroy. It's going to be straight.
Oh, 100%. 100%.
He may get
and we got Jimmy Graham
ball in the end zone.
All right. So that about does it. We are Bears on Tap. Go ahead and follow us at that handle or follow On Tap Sportsnet for all of your Chicago sports needs. I'm Lucas Perfetti. You could follow me at Lucas Perfetti 46. I'm also joined alongside by that pod guy, Duke Coughlin, and Beat On 300, Brandon Suarez. Yeah, man, if you celebrate Christmas, Merry Christmas to you. Otherwise, have a Happy New Year. We will get to you on Sunday, hopefully after a Bears win. Hopefully we're talking an Arizona Cardinals loss or maybe a Rams loss. There's actually a scenario where the Bears will be the 5 seed if for some reason the Bucks, Rams, and Cardinals all end up at 9-7, which would probably be very unlikely. But yeah, Merry Christmas and Bear Down.
Bear Down.
Bear Down. Merry Christmas.